lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class!
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcombe.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
This week, the Springboks traveled to Argentina for a biggish occasion because it can be one in which they win the rugby championship for the first time since 2019. They've selected a team that has made, well, features 10 changes from their last meeting against the All Blacks in Cape Town. And despite the 10 changes, you still get the feeling, Brendan, that they mean business. Wrap up the championship this week and potentially turn the Nelspruit game, the Umbombela game, into a celebration.
Oh, I definitely think so. I think just some of those backline selections that they had, that obviously they telegraphed a lot of their selections by the way they left seven players at home. Some of them we've now heard were injured as well. But just Apelele Fassi is about the most inexperienced guy there, and he deserves another game after he's showing against the All Blacks at Ellis Park. To me, the selection of Kobus Rhinos and Andre Pollard, that's probably the most telling sign that they're going for the jugular. They certainly got a youngish lock pairing, but a lot of talent, and they back these guys. And if you look at some of the stats, a guy like Ron Napier was probably he made the most tackles in that second test in Cape Town against the All Blacks. And he's certainly a workhorse, but this is a young lock pairing, a young loose trio. And, they're backing them all the way. So, look, I suppose they could have gone full ball with their World Cup squad, but I think against Argentina, they've traditionally come out tops by backing other players as well.
Mm. You say back all the way. I looked at that squad when it was announced. So the seven established names, including Sasha Feinberg, Ngubazulu, also left behind. And I looked at that squad and I thought, geez, they could actually, in this test in Argentina, select a team in which the bench ends up with more average caps than the starting 15. So they didn't quite go down that route. If they had, for instance, a guy like Malcolm Marx on the bench as well, next to Eben Etzebeth, and maybe Pollard on the bench and start with Libbo, then suddenly that dynamic changes, and then you would have had a bench with a lot of experience. The bench still has a lot of experience. But as you pointed out earlier, they are going for the jugular by playing Pollard from the start, and Malcolm Marx, obviously, who hasn't really started this year, he's been playing off the bench, he gets a crack.
Well, yeah, I think Malcolm was the one I think a lot of us want to see start the game. Yeah, I think he's by far, in most people, most South African at least, minds the best hooker in the world, and probably in 8 out of 10 other nations, you'd probably find they think the same. And I think it's been a mystery to some of the guys why he hasn't started more games. But saying that, the Box obviously know how they want to use him, and his impact in the second half against the All Blacks was immense, and it really turned the game. So it's nice to see him starting now, and they're obviously looking to get that ascendancy up front very, very quickly. Just two things on the selection, and one on the selection and one on the non-selection. I thought we should address them. Hendrik Wessels is the backup hooker. That's an interesting choice, given that Bongi stayed at home to rest. They have got Johan Krobelaar there, and you would have thought maybe he would have had a go. So him at backup hooker is quite an interesting one, especially because I think Argentina got a pretty decent lineup with Lavanini and some of those guys. And then the second one being last night in the press conference, Rossi had a bit of a dig at Sasha, saying that he sort of masked an injury. And he was very lucky that his words were, he was very lucky they won the games. And maybe we should just quickly play the clip so that people can, who didn't hear it, hear what we're talking about. And you sort of got a bit of irritation. Russ is not a guy to come through and attack players in press conferences, but you got a sense there was a bit of irritation at the entire situation. So have a listen.
Sasha will only be ready for the head of yet to move in me. He injured his knee before the first test match against All Blacks. And he played in that game. And then the Wednesday, the next week, I asked him, why are you limping? And he said, no, he injured his knee last week. Look, I actually then wanted to pull him out of the team because he was limping. And on the field, even. And that's what our players must understand. when the young guy, we have respect for everybody, but you must be honest when it comes to injuries. Nobody who's got injury who's 80% ready or better in the Springbok that has no injuries who's 100% ready. So Yasasa is lucky that we actually won those test matches because, he gambled a bit. And he's having the op now. The knee, I'm not sure exactly what's wrong with the knee, but it will be only ready in 6.5 weeks.
So, yeah, I don't think he won too many friends in management with the masking that injury, especially where the Boks are very much about being honest and open and players not being available on Monday, not being able to play on Saturday.
Mm. I know at the Stormers, they exasperate sometimes because of the way Sasha goes about his business as a fly-off. I mean, he would run into situations not fearing for life or limb. And they probably want their fly-off to maybe to just take it a little bit easier in these games, in these situations. But he's an exciting player and an excitable character. And obviously he wants to play and you can't fault that. But I mean, obviously in this instance, there is team protocol to observe. And he probably just felt that some of this is all on a need-to-know basis.
Yeah, well, I think with a young player with the youthful exuberance, it's really, there's never a bad thing to just keep them in check, keep those feet on the ground at times, because I think things have gone so well for him this year, and he's been on everybody's lips in terms of the way he's played. So to have something like this happen, I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's a train smash. But certainly, yeah. I think Rossi probably privately laid down the law quite a bit to him about how these things work. And I don't think we'll see that him make that mistake again. Interestingly, though, he's out of the nail spread game now as well. So he's out for 4.5 weeks of this knee injury. And it was just a bit of a shock for us because, I mean, none of us knew about it. And only Rossi didn't mention it last night, it would have been a state secret till then.
Yeah, in fact, the way I wrote about it is that it was kept secret at the start by the player, and then the Boks kept it secret because it's something they could have revealed when they announced their squad, but they opted not to. Maybe they didn't know the full extent of the injury, but then you would have imagined that they should have, but they opted not to. I just wanted to return very quickly to the point you made about Malcolm Marx. We should probably also not forget that he had a long injury layoff. And he saw no action whatsoever before the international season. So I thought maybe, they figured let's just ease the guy in a couple of minutes here, a couple of minutes there off the bench. And that obviously has increased game by game. So, yeah, he's obviously now fully up and running.
Yeah, the interesting one about that as well is, I mean, the Boks often, we might not see it so much, but the guys who study the scrums, Don, Himon, those guys often talk about the way the height of the players influences the way they scrum as well. And sometimes you just feel maybe it's just a simple thing that so Malcolm is a better fit with that front row and Bongi's better fit with Frans Mulhaber next to him. It is one that I'm glad to see him starting and hopefully, I'm not sure he'll start at Nelspruit if they win this week, but it's good to see him back in a starting role.
Mm. Yeah, we expect the Nelspruit team also to differ quite a bit from the one that starts this week. And of course, if they get over this hurdle, as we mentioned at the start of the show, it becomes an occasion for celebration. So, they would want to put their best foot forward as well and give the fans something to crow about.
So I suppose we should do a prediction. Yeah? I mean, Argentina have been pretty
decent. In fact, we should. You go first.
I will. They obviously ran riot against Australia, but it very much looked like something we've seen in Australian teams from time to time where they've just gave up in that second half and everything just stuck for Argentina. But they are certainly a good side. Rossi's made the point a couple of times about how their strike runners come from their sevens team, which dominated the World Series the last couple of years. Certainly, they've got a couple of big backs there that can cause problems and they've got great seats. But I think the Boks still should be able to control it up front and put just enough, just as much flair out wide to do it. So I would say it's going to be a tough game. I don't think it's going to be a pretty game. I think we're going to be in for a hostile crowd. And I don't quite know Santiago del Estero, but that seems like a very small town in the middle of Argentina.
It's their first one there, I think. The Boks have played in Tucumán. They haven't played tests there. They've played midweek games in Tucumán. But as far as my memory goes back, it's, I think it's the first time in that neck of the woods playing a test match, because it's not, as I said, it's not too far from Tucumán.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Tucumán's anything to go by, we expect a little hostility. Anybody with a long memory will remember the infamous game that the Box played there. I think it was 94, wasn't it?
93.
So I'm gonna go for a Box victory, but an ugly Box victory by 4 or 5 points.
Yeah, I think it'll be a helter-skelter game. I think a lot of things will be happening at the same time. It'll be quick-paced, but I think there'll be lots of errors. The endeavor will be there, but, you know, there'll be limited time for the ball carriers to do their thing. So there will be lots of mistakes. But I think it will, in the end, actually, I'm going to differ from you. I think it will be actually all of it entertaining. And at the end, I think the Box will prevail by just a few points. I'm going to say the Box by 2.
Ooh, very close there. Yep, very close. Okay, well, then I suppose the other thing happening this weekend, so briefly we should mention that the URC is starting. There's no South African teams involved. They postponed their derbies for the first week. So we've got a bunch of URC games happening, but we're not going to concentrate on that this week. We'll give it some full attention next week ahead of the first round with South African teams in it.
And we'll come up with proper predictions next week when we're fully up and running.
Yes, because I mean, then I think it's a bit easier for us then as well, because we probably have seen a bit of the team, so we know what to make of them. The first week is always a difficult one. But then we look at, there's a Currie Cup final and two very entertaining semifinals. The one at Loftus in particular, a lot of drama. And I just sat there shaking my head about how the Bulls just couldn't plant a knockout blow against 12 players. And I wrote a piece this week, Liam, and I was just looking to get your view on it, on Supersport, where I said, Bulls must actually work so that they don't become the Leinster of South African rugby. Now, Leinster are obviously a very accomplished club, so I'm not talking about the good part of that. I'm talking about the fact that Leinster have lost every playoff game since URC's been formed. And this is now the third Currie Cup in a row, which the Bulls have told us they're going to win. They're playing experienced sides, much more experienced side than all the other teams. But then failed to plant their knockout blow. And if you add that to two URC finals, which they lost, and the Rainbow Cup final that they lost, there's an argument there that, you know, mentally, something needs to change at Loftus. And I know they'll probably scoff at this and say there's nothing wrong. But certainly for Bulls fans, probably be a bit of a worry.
Feeling the blues there, Brendan, the Leinster and Bulls analogy. I think it would be a little bit disconcerting for them and for their fans, because if you look at the way they recruit and the way they go about their business in these different competitions, it's clear that they want to win everything on offer. Whether you speak to the coach or whether you speak to the CEO or whether you speak to, when I say the coach, I mean the director of rugby, or whether you speak to the president of the union. They're ambitious. They want to win everything on offer, and there's nothing wrong with that. So when you do fall short, and obviously there has to be questions, and they've now fallen short, as you well pointed out, in some really significant games. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with, there can't be anything wrong with big match temperament, because, I mean, they've got some really accomplished players and some winners in that squad of theirs. So it's a difficult thing to put your finger on, and it probably will invite further interrogation from within. So, we're not sure how, you know, that will come out, or what will come out in that wash. But that was certainly a very entertaining, drama-filled semi-final. I mean, you couldn't script that. Bulls had a couple of chances of winning it, failed to do so, and got stung. You almost always felt the longer the Sharks stayed in it, you know, the better their chances became.
Of course, there's another conversation which will be happening behind the scenes as well about how good this is with a long URC season ahead. And the timing of this Currie Cup, and the way, you know, teams like the Lions and the Sharks will, you know, go into URC straight from this with an extra couple of hard games under their belt, which would be good at the start of the season and might catch them at the end of the season. But we've got a big final this weekend, first final in Joburg since 2015, I believe. Hoping for the Lions, they're hoping that this sort of kickstarts the same sort of run that they had in 2015 to three consecutive Super Rugby finals after that.
That's a big one for them. I mean, their last appearance in the final was in 2019 when they lost to the Cheetahs. The Sharks' last appearance in the final was 2021. So they will feel that, you know, it's time to get domestic silverware. The Lions are certainly more overdue. And of course, a lot has happened at that franchise since they made those three Super Rugby finals. They have a particular business model that differs from the other three franchises. So if they can lay their hands on a trophy, you know, it will maybe soothe some of the pain that they felt over the last half a decade.
Not going to go too much into that because I'm coming up with our interview right next after this, our weekly interview, which will be with Lions coach Mzwakhi Nkosi, who will talk a bit of Perica final date. But then let's just give a prediction. What do you think is going to happen on Saturday?
Sharks will be very difficult to put down. I think it's going to be very close. And I think it might turn out similar to what we saw in the semi-final. So I want to give it to the Sharks by a few, by three.
I think the Lions might just take it just on the back of crowd and everything there. But I think we're looking at a high-scoring game, and I'd say Lions by five. So let's see next week who's right. And on that note, let's go straight into our interview with Mzwakhi Nkosi, who's coaching the Lions in this Currie Cup final. So have a listen.
And here is our guest, Mzwakhi Nkosi, the Lions coach, the man who only saw his team take a defeat once this season in the Currie Cup. That happened to be against the Sharks, the team they're coming up against this weekend. Mzwakhi, welcome to the show. Are you happy to have the Sharks back at Ellis Park?
Liam, Brendan, thanks for having me. You know what? You can't pick and choose who you're going to play in the final. But in the round-robin phase, we probably went at our best against them. So perhaps there's an opportunity for a little bit of redemption.
Was that not a wake-up call, but I mean, did that sort of stir you in a way and maybe got you thinking in a different way after that defeat?
Yeah, I think more than wake-up call, I think it strengthened our convictions in the way we want to play. We probably went away a little bit from the way we wanted to play and got almost stuck it into the way, if I remember correctly, Lionel Crenier and those guys just into the kicking game the whole time. So we just, like I said to you in the press afterwards, we just never threw any punches. You know, we sort of just waited for something, and there was no catalyst in anyway just to get us going.
And everything in that game seemed to just work for them. I mean, bounce of the ball. And I'm not taking anything away from them. They played really well. But they certainly clicked in that game after showing poor form before.
Yeah. And then, you know, we 2 weeks prior to that, we'd actually beaten them down in Durban. And we felt we could have won by a bigger margin. And I think maybe, you know, the sometimes the challenge of having a youthful squad is, you know, maybe perhaps there was an element of us taking them for granted a little bit. Or not perhaps being as sharp and as honest as we should have been. And that, alongside the bounce of the ball, to be fair to them, they created that bounce of the ball. But Lionel was probably the best I've ever seen Lionel Pena play in his life. And yeah, it's a pretty safe that performance for Ellis Park against us.
Mzwakhi, last time I sat down with you at Ellis Park a couple of years ago, it was a very, very different situation. I think there was a feeling you always being fed to the wolves then with a team, a young team, and playing in the Currie Cup, which I think lost 9 straight at that stage. And I saw your comments this weekend saying that it takes not all coaches will come back from that. Just tell us maybe a bit about that journey, because yeah, it was very easy for people to write you off after that.
Yeah, Brendan, probably I wouldn't have been surprised if one or two people had written me off. But having said that, yeah, the way we went probably as a franchise aligned in terms of how we were going to do the URC as well as the Currie Cup. So that, you know, that alongside a whole host of other things, I had an incredibly difficult season 3 years ago. And yeah, I tried to pick myself up from that. And I'm not afraid to say that I'm proud of the way I've done it. To go to 3 junior finals consecutively, and my third largest Currie Cup was decent considering the changes that had to be made. And, you know, we were still working out how to play URC 1 week and play Currie Cup on the Wednesday, and having them taken those lessons into this year. So I've certainly grown as a coach, and, you know, maybe with a bit of grace, I survived and could still hang in there.
What does that say for the system in which you operate? Because often, I mean, whether it's in rugby or in other codes, we see it as well. There's a couple of defeats and then there's a need to change. And obviously the coach is almost always first in the firing line. What does that say for the faith that the other people above you in the food chain at Ellis Park placed in you? Yeah, what did you make of that?
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is twofold. Yeah. I think it certainly helped without blowing my own horn. There was a body of work that I produced up until that point, you know, in terms of the work that I put in and a couple of trophies that I'd won for the franchise before that from a junior perspective. And then, you know, sometimes the top brass incur some criticism, but to be fair to them, this time, you know, I think they'll be the first to admit that that wasn't the most ideal and enabling environment or best environment for any young coach to function in terms of alignment and the way we wanted to do things. But then to their credit, you know, they stuck to their word and not to say there wasn't any robust and rigorous conversation, but they stuck to their word and you know, thankfully I've stayed in the job and hopefully this is just reward for them backing me as well.
I want to ask you, Ms. Rocky, looking, I know you're not the URC coach. I'm sure that's going to be your first point, your answer anyway. But with that in mind, I mean, Cash is the URC coach. You guys have got less contracted players than the other franchises. You've got to use your resources a lot better. And you've used a couple of the URC players in the last couple of rounds as well. Is this going to be the Lions here in URC? I know it's a bit unfair because you're not the coach, but yeah, we've seen an upward trend for the Lions the last couple of years. But is it that they maybe still, those youngsters coming through, or maybe still need a season or two just to adjust to that and just grow? Or do you think this is a year that the Lions could, the players you've coached, could really burst onto the scene and surprise everyone?
Yeah, brilliant. Funny, my opinion is actually a hybrid of what you I think. We've certainly shown an upward incline, and credit to Ivan and those guys who've done a really good job. But what we've done, and I think that's the healthy thing, what this current club has done, I actually mentioned it in the post-match presser, is that it's created a bigger place and a bigger pool of players. You know, if you ask me, if JT Pretorius is one of the better sixes in the country, Renzo Duplessis is not far behind if he's behind. You know, if Ron Venters is very close to Arnold Lowe and BJ Dixon in terms of blindside flank, and then Seba Kumo's not. Grabby van der Berg is even there, the boss in terms of a scrum off. I don't think Sanele and Nico Steyn are far behind. So what we've done is we created a larger pool to choose from. So it'll be incumbent on us, from a franchise point of view, and even in particular, to rotate the group a whole lot more and a whole lot better. And I think that's possible. I think that's what this Currie Cup has done. If I look at, let's take Emmanuel Chituka with Penta or Jared Cairns, you know, I don't think there's a massive difference between Chituka, Franco Horn, Jared Cairns. They're all Ismen. So what I'm trying to say is there's a bigger pool to choose from, which will enable the Lions to rotate a whole lot more, which will then, and I think, create better consistency. So then the second part of your question is, do I think this is the year? I think this is the year into a breakthrough in terms of playoffs. And then hopefully, you know, a result or two can propel them into the quarters. But I certainly feel that, you know, we're going to carry on in this upward trajectory, you know, that the upward incline.
What would be the biggest for the young players in particular, the ones that aren't really schooled in URC yet but are showing immense promise? What do you think the biggest adjustment is playing in URC? Because, I mean, we've seen the Lions very much a team that excels on the front foot. I think you averaged 47 points in the league stages of the competition. But obviously the demands of URC and how defenses are broken down, they are a bit different. What would you say is the one thing that they need to latch on very quickly playing at a high level?
Look, I think what the URC has shown in terms of the other countries as well is people have adopted the tempo at which you can play the URC, in particular on those surfaces, those hybrid surfaces that you get overseas. So the biggest challenge for the youngsters is the tempo of the game. You know, the physicality that Renzo, if we use Renzo Duplessis, was an obvious example. He's just as physical as any other loose forward that you'll find. But the tempo is the biggest challenge for them, as well as the travel. You know, you go overseas for over 3 weeks, playing in different conditions to play, and that's the adaptation. If you play in Callaway, in Connacht, and then go and play in Treviso. You know, Connacht, you're playing into that massive gale force wind. You play in Treviso, it's a bit muddy underneath. So the adapting to those different conditions is probably their biggest challenge, as well as the tempo. If you think, whether you're playing at Ellis Park, you're playing in Bloemfontein, you're playing at Loftus, and I think the pitch at King's Park has become better. And you play at King's Park, pretty the same surface, isn't it? So, and the conditions are really different unless you're playing in Durban in the summer. So they're adapting to playing in different conditions, and how you adapt to tactics, that is probably going to be the biggest learning curve for those guys.
Back to the Currie Cup, though. I mean, how's the excitement around Ellis Park this week? And I mean, do you feel that you guys, I mean, you had a wonderful season. You had a wonderful semi-final. Do you feel that the Sharks may load their team with some big guns ahead of this final? Or are you confident that no matter who they pick, even if it's the how many Springboks that they have and the ex-players like Emmanuel and those guys, you guys will be fine to handle whatever they bring?
Yeah, Brendan, look, you want to play who you play, who's in front of you. So, you know, one, to worry too much about who's going to be in front of you. They're going to be in front of you in any event. Secondly, if you're John Plumtree and he's caught with coaches, you've got to make two choices, right? It's either you're going to go with a bit of continuity and play those folks who got them to a semi-final, or you're going to try and find, you know, as he said in the presser, he's got to try and build up combinations of his UFC players who spent a large part doing preseason. So, you know, there's pros and cons to that. Obviously, the biggest thing that we see is their lack of cohesiveness. And that might just play in our favor. You know, but the other thing is, I mean, I've coached Jordan since 2019. I've coached Emmanuel since 2016. I've got Burns when he was at the Young Guns at UJ at the time. So yeah, Vince, when he was at the Young Guns at UJ at the time. So, you know, we've got a pretty good idea of what their strengths are, which can only work in our favor. So yeah, I don't think we can worry too much about it. You know, they're a good team with a good roster, you know. But then again, it's Athanati versus Henry Jacobs. It's Henry Jacobs versus Morgan O'Dea. It's either way. Yeah.
Is there a difference between coaching against JP Peterson and Plumtree, I think that's what you'd expect them to change in the game plan.
Yeah, there's definitely been a change. Funny enough, the loss against, I'd beaten JP four times in a row up until our loss against them in the Currie Cup, because obviously we coach against each other in the under-21s as well. And yeah, he was a bit of a relief man, but there's definitely been a change in terms of their K model. JP, it was a young group, but very inexperienced. So it was Lionel Cooney at 10. So they implemented a very pragmatic game plan, you know, to be diplomatic. You know, so they had a hell of a kicking game in terms of when JP was there. And now with Plumin and with Dave Vessels, you know, there's a bit of, you can see that there's a bit of more ball in hand approach. There's lots of counter-attack, you know, having watched the last three games with this particular team that John Plumtree and them are taking. This counter-attack, this ball in hand. So yeah, we'll be ready for both. But yeah, there's definitely been a change of way and a change of tech in terms of the way they play with John Plumtree and the UFC coaches having taken over.
The Sharks have shown, and this is for quite a while already, they are undaunted when they come to Gauteng, whether they play the Lions or whether they play the Bulls. They usually play well here. How much are you hoping the Ellis Park factor will help you this weekend? Because obviously the more bums you get on seats, and that's not to say that there aren't traveling Sharks fan or fans who reside in Johannesburg, but how much do you think Ellis Park can be an ally to you this weekend? I know that something like 20,000 seats were sold by Monday already. So are you hoping for an enthusiastic response from the stands?
Yeah, I think Liam, to be fair, hopefully we've given the supporters something to come to the stadium about. There's been a big drive in terms of, one, us playing rugby that's attractive, two, winning. Then there's been a big drive administratively in terms of getting people, getting bums on seats and getting people here. So, you know, we can only encourage people to come to the stadium. And you at Ennis Park in the semi-final, 14-0 down. Once we got a couple of scores, the crowd gets behind you. without a shadow of a doubt, of course, that's a helping hand. But you've got to do things to get the crowd behind you. You've got to do things to make altitude count. So if we play well, if we get scores on the board, then we use those external factors. Those external factors will count. And they only count if you make them. So if you don't score any points, if you don't raise the tempo of the game, then the altitude won't be a factor, or neither the crowd won't be a factor. So it's incumbent on us to use those things, or to put ourselves in position where we can use those things to make it count against the shot.
You addressed this after the semi-final. We spoke about your game model and how that wouldn't shift for a knockout game or for a final. But you also said a moment ago, you spoke about the need to entertain. People come out to watch the Lions, and you want to give them something to shout and row about. For a final, are you still sticking to your guns? Are you staying true to your DNA, the things that have got you to the final?
Yeah. It's only the big question from a rugby perspective, but we can't move too far away from what's got us, what's made us successful and got us here. Obviously, ironically, we've kicked the ball more than the Sharks. I saw the stats and we've got 16 more kicks than what the
Sharks. Are you ashamed by that?
I'm not really flat. But it's important for us to if we are to exert any, if we are to impose ourselves on the Sharks, we'll have to play in the manner in which, you know, that suits our strengths. That's not to say, and I know people construe that as to say we're going to be reckless, but that's not to say that we're not going to be pragmatic. In fact, we've been pragmatic all season long. But when we have been in positions to play, we've made sure that we play properly.
I think the last one from me was about, yeah, I'm going to leave you with a bit of a curveball. I know you all your attention's on Saturday, but a simple question, but also a very complicated question. What's next for you? Because I'm sure you don't want to stay a junior coach or a Curry Cup coach for the rest of your life. And at the moment, it looks like obviously everyone's going to be there for quite a while, still at the Lions. So your future, what are you looking at? Is there anything you can tell us, or is it just literally wait and see?
Yeah, but then obviously, particularly in our job, it's not just if you don't train the rugby championship with the junior Springboks. I went overseas with them, which was, we caught a mixed bag of results, but that was a hell of an experience for me, having coached SA schools to now transcend into junior Springboks. That was cool, having been involved with them for the rugby championship. So that'd be something I'd be interested to go into in terms of a national point of view. But the next step is to get into the URC setup or a URC setup. But as you and I know, and I think you've been writing about rugby for a long time, timing is everything, and you know, one's got to take the right opportunity at the right time. And say, the coaching game's a long game. And you hell of a route by saying, I don't plan to stay in the junior ranks for too much longer. But timing is everything, and one's got to make sure that you take the right gig at the right time and with the right environment. In particular, in the country that we live in, I've seen national coaches take gigs that were probably due to them, and it's backfired, so, or taken domestic gigs. So, yeah, the challenge for any coach, and there's no signs to it, or there's no formula to it, because there's a feel, is one got to make sure that you take the right gigs at the right time. But the biggest thing to that is creating opportunities, hopefully. And by going to the final, one creates an opportunity. And again, if I get another opportunity, keep creating opportunities to go further.
I was just going to, sorry, add the last one quickly. Are you disappointed you're not facing Peewee this week? Because
we are actually.
To you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I've obviously coached against each other for a long time, back in 2012 when we were still schoolboy coaches. In fact, we coached at Wilde Klaver, we coached each other against each other at the Craven Week. You know, when he was with Port, I was with the Lions Craven Week teams. So when he was at the Sharks coaching in the juniors, and I was at the Lions coaching in the juniors. So, yeah, we're pretty disappointed. We actually had a conversation that we both dissected his game yesterday. We were on the phone for 2 hours. And yeah, I guess the bottom line is at 20-7, one more score buries the game. And yeah, we struggled to fathom how they connived against themselves to lose the game. But having said that, should be the Sharks showed any little amount of character. Wowzers. And they just never went away. So that's also something for us to have a look at. You know, the Sharks aren't going to go away. And maybe that's something that And that's for them going into the URC season. Yeah, we spoke for a long time yesterday, and he's pretty disappointed. Yeah, it would have been cool. It would have been really cool.
Zwak, it's always fun to chat to you, whether it's with you facing a microphone or whether it's on the deck at Pirates. Either way, it's always good. Thanks for making time for us, and good luck on Saturday. We're certainly looking forward to this one.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and hopefully I'm still tracing you under positive circumstances.
Good luck for Saturday.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Good man there, Zwaki. I was happy to share generously with us. And he certainly has a lot to think about before Saturday's final.
Yeah, and there was a time a couple of years ago, and I mentioned that in the where I sat down with them, it really felt like they were throwing him to the wolves, giving him the Curry Cup a couple of years ago, not giving him the players, not giving him the support. And yeah, I suppose they've learned from that, and that's good to see they have learned from that. Because he's definitely one, him and Pwin are two of the brightest coaching prospects in this country. And hopefully we'll see them do better things. It's pretty they can face each other, but I suppose he'll think the champagne is just as sweet if they win on set.
Yeah. Mzwaki always brings an interesting energy to a room. So good luck to you on Saturday.
Yeah, that is good. Anyway, that's our show. We'll chat to you next week, guys. We'll have the books back. I'll be in Nelspruit. You'll be joining me there later the week. Yeah, but it's going to be another big week, another big Springbok, the last big domestic Springbok week for a while.
It will be. And it's, you know, we are kind of predicting it. It will be a week of celebration down in Mbubela. So let's, you know, in fact, that won't be the only celebration, Brendan, but let me remind you. So there is an awful lot to look forward to next week.
There is, and maybe it's worth it doing our next pod with a bit of champagne. Why not? We will see. Hopefully the results give us that chance.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacaranda.fm.com or the Jackpot app.